and Leela's eyes, as she listened to him, suddenly narrowed to slits, following a mode of behavior that I knew well. Now she would change her tone. Now, I thought, she'll turn mean. She said to him, in fact, "How dare you?" She said to him, "To whom do you think you're speaking?" She said to him, "How can you think of putting this letter, your foolishness with that whore from a good family, on the same plane as me, my husband, my marriage, and everything that is my life? You really think you're something, but you don't get the joke. In fact, you don't understand a thing. Nothing. You heard me. And don't make that face. Let's go to bed, Lainu." 61. Nino did nothing to restrain us. Bruno said, "See you tomorrow." We took a minicab and returned to the house. But during the journey, Leela began to tremble. She grabbed my hand and gripped it hard. She began to confess to me in a chaotic way everything that had happened between her and Nino. She had yearned for him to kiss her. She had let herself be kissed. She had wanted to feel his hands on her. She had let him. "I can't sleep. If I fall asleep, I wake with a start. I look at the clock. I hope it's already day, that we have to go to the beach. But it's night. I can't sleep anymore. I have in my head all the words he said, all the ones that I can't wait to tell him. I resisted. I said, 'I'm not like Pinucha. I can do what I like. I can start and stop. It's a game.' I kept my lips pressed together. Then I said to myself, 'Well, really, what's a kiss?' And I discovered what it was. I didn't know. I swear to you that I didn't know. And now I can't do without it." I gave him my hand. I entwined my fingers with his, tight, and it seemed to me painful to let go. How many things I've missed that now are landing on me all at once. I go around like a girlfriend when I'm married. I'm frantic. My heart is pounding here in my throat and in my temples, and I like everything. I like that he drags me into secluded places. I like the fear that someone might see us. I like the idea that they might see us. Did you do those things with Antonio? Did you suffer when you had to leave him and you couldn't wait to see him again? Is it normal, Lainu? Was it like that for you? I don't know how it began and when. At first, I didn't like him. I liked how he talked, what he said, but physically, no. I thought, how many things he knows, this man, I should listen, I should learn. Now, when he speaks, I can't even concentrate. I look at his mouth, and I'm ashamed of looking at it. I turn my eyes in another direction. In a short time, I've come to love everything about him, his hands, the delicate fingernails, that thinness, the ribs under his skin, his slender neck, the beard that he shaves badly so it's always rough, his nose, the hair on his chest, his long slender legs, his knees. I want to caress him, and I think of things that disgust me. They really disgust me, Lainu, but I would like to do them to give him pleasure, to make him be happy. I listened to her for a good part of the night, in her room, the door closed, the light out. She was lying on the window side, and in the moon's glow, the hair on her neck gleamed, and the curve of her hip. I was lying on the door side, Stefano's side, and I thought, her husband sleeps here, every weekend on this side of the bed, and draws her to him. In the afternoon, at night, and embraces her. And yet here, in this bed, she is telling me about Nino. The words for him take away her memory. They erase from these sheets every trace of conjugal love. She speaks of him, and in speaking of him, she calls him here. She imagines him next to her, and since she has forgotten herself, she perceives no violation or guilt. She confides. She tells me things that she would do better to keep to herself. She tells me how much she desires the person I've desired forever. And she does so convinced that I, through insensitivity, through a less acute vision, through incapacity to grasp what she instead is able to grasp, have never truly understood that same person, never realized his qualities. I don't know if it's in bad faith or if she's really convinced, it's my fault, my tendency to conceal myself, that since elementary school I've been deaf and blind, so that it took her to discover, here on Ischia, the power unleashed by the son of Saratore. Oh, how I hate this presumption of hers. It poisons my blood. Yet I don't know how to say to her, that's enough. I can't go to my room to cry in silence, but I stay here, and now and then I interrupt her. I try to calm her. I pretended a detachment I didn't have. It's the sea, I said to her, the fresh air, the vacation, and Nino knows how to confuse you. The way he talks, he makes everything look easy. But unfortunately, tomorrow Stefano arrives, and you'll see. Nino will seem like a boy to you, which he really is. I know him well. To us, he seems like somebody. But if you think how Professor Galliani's son treats him, you remember? You understand immediately that we overestimate him. Of course, compared to Bruno, he seems extraordinary. But after all, he's only the son of a railroad worker who got it in his head to study. Remember that Nino was from the neighborhood. He comes from there. Remember that at school, you were smarter, even if he was older. And then you see how he takes advantage of his friend, makes him pay for everything, drinks, ice cream. It cost me to say those things. I considered them lies. And it was of little use. Leela grumbled. She objected hesitantly. I refuted her. Until she really got mad and began to defend Nino in the tone of someone who says, I'm the only one who knows what sort of person he is. She asked why I was always disparaging him. She asked me what I had against him. He helped you, she said. He even wanted to publish that nonsense of yours in a review. Sometimes I don't like you, Lenu. You diminish everything and everyone, even people who are lovable, if you just look at them. I lost control. I couldn't bear it anymore. I had spoken ill of the person I loved in order to do something to make her feel better, and now she insulted me. Finally, I managed to say, "Do what you like. I'm going to bed." But she immediately changed her tone. She embraced me. She hugged me tight to keep me there. She whispered, "Tell me what to do." I pushed her away with annoyance. I whispered that she had to decide herself. I couldn't decide in her place. "Pinuccia," I said, "how did she do it? In the end, she behaved better than you." She agreed. We sang the praises of Pinuccia, and abruptly she sighed. "All right, tomorrow I won't go to the beach, and the day after, I'll go back to Naples with Stefano." 62. It was a terrible Saturday. She really didn't go to the beach, and I didn't go either. But I thought only of Nino and Bruno, who were waiting for us in vain. And I didn't dare say, "I'll make a quick trip to the sea, time for a swim, and then I'll come back." Nor did I dare ask, What should I do? Pack the suitcases? Are we going? Are we staying? I helped Nunzia clean the house, cook lunch and dinner, every so often checking on Leela, who didn't even get up. She stayed in bed, reading and writing in her notebook. And when her mother called her to eat, she didn't answer. And when she called her again, she slammed the door of her room so violently that the whole house shook. "Too much sea makes one nervous," Nunzia said, as we ate lunch alone. "Yes, and she's not even pregnant." "No." In the late afternoon, Leela left her bed, ate something, spent hours in the bathroom. She washed her hair, put on her makeup, chose a pretty green dress. But her face remained sullen. Still, she greeted her husband affectionately, and he, seeing her, gave her a movie kiss, a long, intense kiss, with Nunzia and I as embarrassed spectators. Stefano brought greetings from my family, said that Pinuccia had made no more scenes, recounted in minute detail how happy the Salatas were with the new shoe styles that Reno and Fernando were working on. Leela wasn't pleased by Stefano's reference to the new styles, and things between them were spoiled. Until that moment, she had kept a forced smile on her face, but as soon as she heard the name of these Salatas, she became aggressive, and said she didn't give a damn about those two. She wouldn't live her life according to what they thought about this or that. Stefano was disappointed. He frowned. He realized that the enchantment of the previous weeks was over. But he answered her with his usual agreeable half-smile. He said that he was only telling her what had happened in the neighborhood, that there was no need to take that tone. It was little use. Leela rapidly transformed the evening into a relentless conflict. Stefano couldn't say a word without hostile criticism from her. They went to bed squabbling, and I heard them quarreling until I fell asleep. I woke at dawn. I didn't know what to do. Gather my things? Wait for Leela to make a decision? Go to the beach? With the risk of running into Nino? Something that Leela would not have forgiven? Rack my brains all day as I was already doing, shut in my room. I decided to leave a note saying that I was going to the Moronti, but would be back in the early afternoon. I wrote that I couldn't leave Ischia without seeing Nella. I wrote in good faith, but today I know what was going on in my mind. I wanted to trust myself to chance. Leela couldn't reproach me if I ran into Nino when he had gone to ask his parents for money. The result was a muddled day and a modest waste of money. I hired a boat to take me to the Moronti. I went to the place where the Saratores usually camped and found only the umbrella. I looked around and saw Donato, who was swimming, and he saw me. He waved in greeting, hurried out of the water, told me that his wife and children had gone to spend the day in Forio with Nino. I was extremely disappointed. The situation was not only ironic, it was contemptuous. It had taken away the son and delivered me the sickening patter of the father. When I tried to get away to go and see Nella, Salvatore wouldn't let me go. He gathered up his things and insisted on coming with me. On the road, he assumed a sentimental tone, and without any embarrassment, began to speak of what had happened between us years earlier. He asked me to forgive him. He murmured that one cannot command one's heart. He spoke in a melancholy tone of my beauty then, and above all, of my present beauty. "What an exaggeration," I said. And while I knew I should be serious and aloof, I began to laugh out of nervousness. And though he was encumbered by the umbrella and his things, he would not relinquish a somewhat breathless, rambling discourse. He said that in substance, the problem of youth was the lack of eyes to see oneself and feelings to feel about oneself with objectivity. "There's the mirror," I replied, "and that is objective."
"The mirror? The mirror is the last thing you can trust. I'll bet that you feel less pretty than your two friends."
"Yes."
"And yet, you are much, much more beautiful than they are. Trust me. Look what lovely blonde hair you have, and what a bearing. You need to confront and resolve two problems only. The first is your bathing suit. It's not adequate to your potential. The second is the style of your glasses." "This is really wrong, Elena. Too heavy. You have such a delicate face, so remarkably shaped by the things you study. What you need is daintier glasses."
As I listened, my irritation diminished. He was like a scientist of female beauty. Mainly he spoke with such detached expertise that at a certain point he led me to think, and if it's true? Maybe I don't know how to value myself. On the other hand, where is the money to buy suitable clothes, a suitable bathing suit, suitable glasses? I was about to yield to a complaint about poverty and wealth when he said to me with a smile, "Besides, if you don't trust my judgment, you'll be aware, I hope, of how my son looked at you the time you came to see us." Only then did I realize that he was lying to me. His words were intended to appeal to my vanity, to make me feel good, and drive me toward him in the need for gratification. I felt stupid, wounded not by him, with his lies, but by my own stupidity. I cut him short with an increasing rudeness that froze him. At the house, I talked to Nella for a while. I told her that we might all be returning to Naples that night, and I wanted to say goodbye. "A pity that you're going." Yes. Eat with me." "I can't. I have to go." "But if you don't go, swear that you'll come again and not so short next time. Stay with me for a day, or even overnight, since you know there's the bed. I have so many things to tell you." "Thanks." Salvatore interrupted. He said,
"We count on it. You know how much we love you."
I fled, also because there was a relative of Nella's who was going to the port in a car, and I didn't want to miss the ride. Along the way, Salvatore's words, surprisingly, even if I only rejected them, began to dig into me. No, maybe he hadn't lied. He knew how to see beyond appearances. He had really had a means of observing his son's gaze on me. And if I was pretty, if Nino seriously found me attractive, and I knew it was so, in the end he had kissed me, he had held my hand. It was time I looked at facts for what they were. Leela had taken him from me. Leela had separated him from me to win him for herself. Maybe she hadn't done it on purpose, but still she had done it. I decided suddenly that I had to find him, see him at all costs. Now that our departure was imminent, now that the force of seduction that Leela had exercised over him would no longer have a chance to fascinate him, now that she herself had decided to return to the life that was hers, the relationship between him and me could begin again, in Naples, in the form of friendship. At least we could meet to talk about her, and then we would return to our conversations, to our reading. I would demonstrate that I could get interested in his interests better than Leela's, certainly, maybe even better than Nadia. Yes, I had to speak to him right away. Tell him I'm leaving. Tell him let's see each other in the neighborhood, in Piazza Nazionale, in Mezzo Canone, wherever you want, but as soon as possible.
I found a minicab. I took it to Forio, to Bruno's house. I called. No one looked out. I wandered through the town, feeling more and more depressed. Then I set out to walk along the beach. And this time, chance apparently decided in my favor. I had been walking for a long time when I saw before me Nino. He was happy we had met, a barely controlled happiness. His eyes were too bright, his gestures excited, his voice overwrought. I looked for the two of you yesterday and today. Where's Lena?
With her husband.
He took an envelope out of his pants pocket. He shoved it into my hand too forcefully. Can you give her this?
I was annoyed. It's pointless, Nino.
Give it to her.
Tonight we're leaving. We'll go back to Naples.
He had an expression of suffering. He said hoarsely, Who decided?
She did.
I don't believe it.
It's true. She told me last night.
He thought for a moment, pointed to the envelope. Please, give her that anyway. Right away.
All right.
Swear that you will.
I told you. Yes.
He walked with me for a long way, saying spiteful things about his mother and his brothers and sister. They tormented me, he said. Luckily, they went back to Burano. I asked him about Bruno. He made a gesture of irritation. He was studying. He said mean things about him as well. And you're not studying? I can't. His head sank between his shoulders. He grew melancholy. He began to talk about the mistakes one makes because a professor, as a result of his own problems, leads you to believe you're smart. He realized that the things he wanted to learn had never really interested him.
What do you mean?
Suddenly? A moment is enough to change the direction of your life completely. What was happening to him? With these banal words, I no longer recognized him. I vowed I would help him return to himself. You're upset now, and you don't know what you're saying, I said, in my best sensible tone. But as soon as you return to Naples, we can see each other if you want, and talk. He nodded yes, but right afterward cried angrily, I'm finished with the university. I want to find a job. 63. He came with me almost to the house, so that I was afraid of meeting Stefano and Lila. I said goodbye in a hurry and went up the stairs. Tomorrow morning at 9, he shouted. I stopped. If we leave, I'll see you in the neighborhood. Look for me there. Nino made a sign of no, decisively. You won't leave, he said, as if he were giving a threatening order to fate. I gave him a final wave and hurried up the stairs, sorry that I hadn't had a chance to examine what was in the envelope. In the house, I found an unpleasant atmosphere. Stefano and Nunzia were whispering together. Lila must be in the bathroom or the bedroom. When I went in, they both looked at me resentfully. Stefano said grimly, without preamble, Will you tell me what you and she are getting up to?
In what sense?
She says she's tired of Ischia. She wants to go to Amalfi.
I don't know anything about it.
Nunzia intervened, but not in her usual motherly way. Lei Nu, don't put wrong ideas in her head. You can't throw money out the window. What does Amalfi have to do with anything? We've paid to stay here until September.
I got mad. I said, You are both mistaken. It's I who do what Lena wants, not the opposite.
Then go and tell her to be reasonable, Stefano muttered. I'll be back next week. We'll be together for the mid-August holiday. And you'll see, I'll show you a good time. But now I don't want to hear any nonsense. Shit, You think I'll take you to Amalfi? And if you don't like Amalfi, where do I take you? To Capri? And then? Cut it out, Lenu.
His tone intimidated me. Where is she?
I asked.
Nunzia indicated the bedroom.
I went to Leela, sure that I would find the suitcases packed, and her determined to leave, even at the risk of a beating. Instead, she was in her slip and was sleeping on the unmade bed. All around was the usual disorder, but the suitcases were piled in a corner, empty. I shook her. Leela. She started, asked me right away with a look veiled by sleep.
Where have you been? Did you see Nino?
Yes. This is for you.
I gave her the envelope reluctantly. She opened it, took out a sheet of paper.
She read it, and in a flash became radiant, as if an injection of stimulants had swept away drowsiness and despair.
What does it say? I asked cautiously.
To me, nothing.
So?
It's for Nadia. He's leaving her.
She put the letter back in the envelope and gave it to me, urging me to keep it carefully hidden.
I stood, confused, with the envelope in my hands.
Nino was leaving Nadia? And why?
Because Leela had asked him to? So she would win?
I was disappointed. He was sacrificing the daughter of Professor Galliani to the game that he and the wife of the grocer were playing. I said nothing. I stared at Leela while she got dressed, put on her makeup. Finally, I said, "Why did you ask Stefano that absurd thing, to go to Amalfi? I don't understand you."
She smiled. "I don't either."
We left the room. Leela kissed Stefano affectionately, rubbing against him happily, and we decided to go with him to the port, Nunzia and I in the minicab, he and Leela on the Lambretta. We had some ice cream while we waited for the boat. Leela was nice to her husband, gave him 1,000 bits of advice, promised to telephone every night. Before he started up the gangplank, he put an arm around my shoulders and whispered in my ear,
"I'm sorry. I was really angry. Without you, I don't know how it would have ended this time."
It was a polite statement, and yet I felt in it a sort of ultimatum that meant, "Tell your friend, please, that if she goes too far again, it's all over."
64. At the head of the letter was Nadia's address in Capri. As soon as the boat left the shore carrying Stefano away, Leela propelled us cheerfully to the tobacconist, bought a stamp, and, while I kept Nunzia busy, recopied the address onto the envelope and mailed it. We wandered through Forio, but I was too nervous and kept talking to Nunzia. When we returned to the house, I drew Leela into my room and spoke plainly to her. She listened to me in silence, but with a distracted air, as if on the one hand she felt the gravity of the things I was saying, and on the other had abandoned herself to thoughts that made every word meaningless. I said to her, "Leela, I don't know what you have in mind, but in my view you're playing with fire. Now Stefano has left happy, and if you telephone him every night, he'll be even happier. But be careful. He'll be back in a week, and will stay until August 20th. Do you think you can go on like this? Do you think you can play with people's lives? Do you know that Nino doesn't want to study anymore? He wants to find a job? What have you put in his head? And why did you make him leave his girlfriend? Do you want to ruin him? Do you want to ruin both of you?" At that last question, she roused herself and burst out laughing, but somewhat artificially. She sounded amused, but who knows? She said I ought to be proud of her, She had made me look good. Why? Because she had been considered in every way finer than the very fine daughter of my professor. Because the smartest boy in my school, and maybe in Naples, and maybe in Italy, and maybe in the world, according to what I said naturally, had just left that very respectable young lady, no less, to please her, the daughter of a shoemaker, elementary school diploma, wife of Caracci. She spoke with increasing sarcasm, and as if she were finally revealing a cruel plan of revenge. I must have looked angry, she realized it, but for several minutes she continued in that tone, as if she couldn't stop herself. Was she serious? Was that her true state of mind at that moment? I exclaimed, "Who are you putting on this show for? For me? Do you want to make me believe that Nino is ready to do anything, however crazy, to please you?" The laughter disappeared from her eyes. She darkened, abruptly changed her tone. "No, I'm lying. It's completely the opposite. I'm the one who's prepared to do anything, and it's never happened to me with anyone, and I'm glad that it's happening now." Then, overcome by embarrassment, she went to bed without even saying goodnight. I fell into a nervous half-sleep, during which I convinced myself that the last little trickle of words was truer than the torrent that had preceded it. During the week that followed, I had the proof. First of all, as early as Monday, I realized that Bruno, after Pinuccia's departure, really had begun to focus on me. And he now considered that the moment had arrived to behave toward me as Nino behaved with Leela. While we were swimming, he clumsily pulled me toward him to kiss me, so that I swallowed a mouthful of water and had to return to the shore coughing. I was annoyed. He saw it. When he came to lie down in the sun next to me, with the air of a beaten dog, I made a kind but firm little speech whose sense was, "Bruno, you're very nice, but between you and me there can't be anything but a fraternal feeling." He was sad, but he didn't give up. The same night, after the phone call to Stefano, we all went to walk on the beach, and then we sat on the cold sand and stretched out to look at the stars, Leela resting on her elbows, Nino with his head on her stomach, I with my head on Nino's stomach, Bruno with his head on my stomach. We gazed at the constellations, praising the portentous architecture of the sky with trite formulas. Not all of us. Leela didn't. She was silent, but when we had exhausted the catalog of worshipful wonder, she said that the spectacle of night frightened her. She saw no structure, but only random shards of glass in a blue pitch. This silenced us all, and I was vexed. She had that habit of speaking last, which gave her time to reflect and allowed her to disrupt with a single remark everything that we had more or less thoughtlessly said. "How can you be afraid?" I exclaimed. "It's beautiful." Bruno immediately agreed. Nino instead encouraged her. With a slight movement, he signaled me to free his stomach. He sat up and began to talk to her as if they were alone. The sky, the temple, order, disorder. Finally, they got up and, still talking, disappeared into the darkness. I was lying down, but leaning on my elbows. I no longer had Nino's warm body as a pillow, and the weight of Bruno's head on my stomach was irritating. I said, "Excuse me," touching his hair. He sat up, grabbed me by the waist, pressed his face against my chest. I muttered no, but he pushed me down on the sand and searched for my mouth, pressing one hand hard against my breast. Then I shoved him away forcefully, crying, "Stop it!" And this time I was unpleasant. I hissed, "I don't like you. How do I have to tell you?" He stopped, embarrassed, sat up. He said in a low voice, "Is it possible that you don't like me even a little?" I tried to explain that it wasn't a thing that could be measured, saying, "It's not a matter of more beauty or less, more liking or less. It's that some people attract me and others don't. It's nothing to do with how they are, really."
"You don't like me?"
I said impatiently, "No." But as soon as I uttered that monosyllable, I burst into tears, while stammering things like, "See, I'm crying for no reason. I'm an idiot. I'm not worth wasting time on." He touched my cheek with his fingers and tried again to embrace me, murmuring, "I want to give you so many presents. You deserve them. You're so pretty." I pulled away angrily and shouted into the darkness, my voice cracking, "Leela, come back right now. I want to go home." The two friends went with us to the foot of the stairs, then they left. As Leela and I went up, I said in exasperation, "Go where you like, do what you like, I'm not going with you anymore. It's the second time Bruno has put his hands on me. I don't want to be alone with him anymore. Is that clear?" 65. There are moments when we resort to senseless formulations and advance absurd claims to hide straightforward feelings. Today, I know that in other circumstances, after some resistance, I would have given in to Bruno's advances. I wasn't attracted to him, certainly, but I hadn't been especially attracted to Antonio either. One becomes affectionate toward men slowly, whether they coincide or not with whomever in the various phases of life we have taken as the model of a man. And Bruno Socavo, in that phase of his life, was courteous and generous. It would have been easy to harbor some affection for him. But the reasons for rejecting him had nothing to do with anything really disagreeable about him. The truth was that I wanted to restrain Leela. I wanted to be a hindrance to her. I wanted her to be aware of the situation she was getting into and getting me into. I wanted her to say to me, "Yes, you're right. I'm making a mistake. I won't go off in the dark with Nino anymore. I won't leave you alone with Bruno. Starting now, I will behave as befits a married woman." Naturally, it didn't happen. She confined herself to saying, "I'll talk to Nino about it and you'll see. Bruno won't bother you anymore." So day after day, we continued to meet the boys at 9 in the morning and separated at midnight. But on Tuesday night, after the call to Stefano, Nino said, "You've never been to see Bruno's house. You want to come over?" I immediately said no. I pretended I had a stomach ache and wanted to go home. Nino and Leela looked uncertainly at each other. Bruno said nothing. I felt the weight of their discontent and added, embarrassed, "Maybe another night." Leela said nothing, but when we were alone, she exclaimed, "You can't make my life unhappy, Lenu." I answered, "If Stefano finds out that we went alone to their house, he'll be angry not just at you, but also at me." And I didn't stop there. At home, I stirred up Nunzia's displeasure and used it to urge her to reproach her daughter for too much sun, too much sea, staying out till midnight. I even went so far as to say, as if I wished to make peace between mother and daughter, "Signora Nunzia, tomorrow night come and have ice cream with us. You'll see we're not doing anything wrong." Leela became furious. She said that she had had a miserable life all year, always shut up in the grocery, and now she had the right to a little freedom. Nunzia also lost her temper. "Leena, what are you saying? Freedom? What freedom? You are married. You must be accountable to your husband. Lenucha can want a little freedom. You can't." Her daughter went to her room and slammed the door. But the next day, Leela won. Her mother stayed home, and we went to telephone Stefano. You must be here at 11 on the dot, Nunzia said, grumpily, addressing me. And I answered, all right. She gave me a long, questioning look. By now she was alarmed. She was our guard, but she wasn't guarding us. She was afraid we were getting into trouble, but she thought of her own sacrificed youth and didn't want to keep us from some innocent amusement. I repeated to reassure her, at 11. The phone call to Stefano lasted a minute at most. When Leela came out of the booth, Nino asked, Are you feeling well tonight, Lenu? Come see the house? Come on, Bruno urged me. You can have a drink and then go. Leela agreed. I said nothing. On the outside, the building was old, shabby, but inside it had been renovated. The cellar white and well lighted, full of wine and cured meats. A marble staircase with a wrought iron banister. Sturdy doors on which gold handles shone. Windows with gilded fixtures. There were a lot of rooms, yellow couches, a television. In the kitchen, cupboards painted aquamarine, and in the bedrooms, wardrobes that were like Gothic churches. I thought, for the first time clearly, that Bruno really was rich, richer than Stefano. I thought that if ever my mother had known that the student son of the owner of Socavo Mortadella had courted me, and that I had been no less a guest at his house, and that instead of thanking God for the good fortune he had sent me and seeking to marry him, I had rejected him twice, she would have beaten me. On the other hand, it was precisely the thought of my mother, of her lame leg, that made me feel unfit even for Bruno. In that house, I was intimidated. Why was I there? What was I doing there? Leela acted nonchalant. She laughed often. I felt as if I had a fever, a nasty taste in my mouth. I began to say yes, to avoid the embarrassment of saying no. Do you want a drink of this? Do you want to put on this record? Do you want to watch television? Do you want some ice cream? When finally I realized that Nino and Leela had disappeared, I was worried. Where had they gone? Was it possible that they were in Nino's bedroom? Possible that Leela was willing to cross even that limit? Possible that... I didn't want to think about it. I jumped up. I said to Bruno, It's late. He was kind, but with an undertone of sadness. He murmured, Stay a little longer. He said that the next day he had to leave very early to attend a family celebration. He announced that he would be gone until Monday, and those days without me would be a torment. He took my hand delicately, said that he loved me, and other things like that. I gently took my hand away. He didn't try for any other contact. Instead, he spoke at length about his feelings for me. He, who in general said little, and I had trouble interrupting him. When I did, I said, I really have to go. Then, in a louder voice, Leela, please come. It's 10:15. Some minutes passed. The two reappeared. Nino and Bruno took us to a taxi. Bruno said goodbye as if he were going not to Naples for a few days, but to America for the rest of his life. On the way home, Leela, her tone pointed, as if she were delivering important news. Nino told me that he has a lot of admiration for you. Not me, I answered right away, in a rude voice. And then I whispered, What if you get pregnant? She said in my ear, There's no danger. We're just kissing and holding. Oh, and anyway, I don't stay pregnant. It happened once. I told you, I don't stay pregnant. He knows how to manage. He who? Nino. He would use a condom. What's that? I don't know. He called it that. You don't know what it is, and you trust it? It's something that he puts over it. Over where? I wanted to force her to name things. I wanted her to understand what she was saying. First, she assured me that they were only kissing. Then she spoke of him as someone who knew how not to get her pregnant. I was enraged. I expected that she would be ashamed. Instead, she seemed pleased with everything that had happened to her and that would happen to her. So much so that when we got home, she was nice to Nunzia, pointed out that we had returned early, got ready for bed. But she left her door open, and when she saw me going to my room, she called me. She said, "Stay here a minute. Close the door." I sat on the bed, but trying to make it clear that I was tired of her and everything. "What do you have to tell me?" She whispered, "I want to go and sleep at Nino's." I was astonished. "And Nunzia? Wait, don't get mad. There's not much time left, Lenu. Stefano will arrive on Saturday. He'll stay for 10 days, then we go back to Naples, and everything will be over." "Everything what?" "This. These days. These evenings." We discussed it for a long time. She seemed very lucid. She murmured that nothing like this would ever happen to her again. She whispered that she loved him, that she wanted him. She used that verb, amare, that we had found only in books and in the movies, that no one used in the neighborhood. I would say it at most to myself. We all preferred voler bene. She knew. She loved. She loved Nino. But she knew very well that that love had to be suffocated. Every occasion for it to breathe had to be removed. And she would do it. She would do it starting Saturday night. She had no doubts she would be capable of it, and I had to trust her. But the very little time that remained, she wished to devote to Nino. "I want to stay in bed with him for a whole night and a whole day," she said. "I want to sleep holding him and being held, and kiss him when I feel like it, caress him when I feel like it, even while he's sleeping. Then that's it." "It's impossible. You have to help me." "How?" "You have to convince my mother that Nella has invited us to spend 2 days at Barano, and that we'll spend the night there." I was silent for a moment. So she already had a project. She had a plan. Clearly she had worked it out with Nino. Maybe he had even sent Bruno away on purpose. For how long had they been deciding the how, the where? No more speeches on neo-capitalism, on neo-colonialism, on Africa, on Latin America, on Beckett, on Bertrand Russell. Mere doodles. Nino no longer talked about anything. Their brilliant minds now were exercised only on how to deceive Nunzia and Stefano, using me. "You are out of your mind," I said furiously. "Even if your mother believes you, your husband never will." "You persuade her to send us to Barano, and I'll persuade her not to tell Stefano." "No." "Aren't we friends anymore?" "No." "You're not Nino's friend anymore?" "No." But Leela knew how to draw me in, and I was unable to resist. On the one hand, I said that's enough. On the other, I was depressed at the idea of not being part of her life, of the means by which she invented it for herself. What was that deception but another of her fantastic moves, which were always full of risks? The two of us together, allied with each other, in the struggle against all. We would devote the next day to overcoming Nunzia's opposition. The day after that, we would leave early, together. At Forio, we would separate. She would go to Bruno's house with Nino. I would take the boat for the Maranti. She would spend the whole day and the whole night with Nino. I would be at Nella's and sleep in Brano. The next day, I would return to Forio for lunch. We would see each other at Bruno's, and together would return home. Perfect. The more her mind was ignited, as, in minute detail, she planned how to make every part of the ruse add up, the more skillfully she ignited mine, too. And she hugged me, begged me. Here was a new adventure, together. Here was how we would take what life didn't want to give us, here. Or would I rather that she be deprived of that joy, that Nino should suffer, that both should lose the light of reason and end up not capably managing their desire, but being dangerously overwhelmed by it? There was a moment that night when, by following her along the thread of her arguments, I came to think that to support her in this undertaking, besides being an important milestone for our long sisterhood, was also the way of manifesting my love. She said friendship, but I desperately thought, love, 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 for Nino. And it was at that point that I said, all right, I'll help you. 66. The next day, I told Nunzia many lies that were so disgraceful I was ashamed. At the center of the lies, I placed Maestra Oliviero, who was in Potenza, in goodness knows what terrible conditions, and it was my idea, not Lila's. Yesterday, I said to Nunzia, I met Nella Incardo, and she told me that her cousin, who is convalescing, has come to stay with her for a vacation at the seaside that will finally restore her health. Tomorrow night, Nella's having a party for the teacher, and she invited me and Lila, who were her best students. We would really like to go, but it will be late and so impossible. But Nella has said that we can sleep at her house.
In Brano?
Nunzia asked, frowning. Yes, the party is there.
You go, Lenu. Lila can't. Her husband will get mad.
Lila threw in, let's not tell him.
What do you mean?
Mama, he's in Naples and I'm here. He'll never find out.
One way or another, things are always found out.
Well, no.
Yes, and that's enough. Lena, I don't want to discuss it further. If Lenucha wants to go, fine, but you stay here.
We went on for a good hour, I making the point that the teacher was very sick, and this might be our last chance to show her our gratitude, and Lila pressing her like this. How many lies have you told Papa? Admit it. And not for bad reasons, but for good ones. To have a moment to yourself, to do a just thing that he would never allow. Wavering, Nunzia first said that she had never told the tiniest lie to Fernando. Then she admitted that she had told one, two, many. Finally, she cried with rage and at the same time maternal pride.
What happened when I conceived you? An accident, a hiccup, a convulsion, the lights went out, a bulb blew, the basin of water fell off the night table? Certainly, there must have been something. If you were born so intolerable, so different from the others.
And here she grew sad. She seemed to soften. But soon she was indignant again. She said, you don't tell lies to a husband just to see a school teacher. And Lila exclaimed, to Maestra Oliviero I owe the little I know. The only school I had was with her. And in the end, Nunzia gave in. But she insisted on a precise timetable. Saturday, at exactly 2 o'clock, we were to be home again, not a minute later.
If Stefano arrives early and doesn't find you? Really, Lena, don't put me in an ugly situation. Clear?
Clear. We went to the beach.
Leela was radiant. She embraced me. She kissed me. She said that she would be grateful for her whole life. But I already felt guilty about that evocation of Maestra Oliviero, whom I had placed at the center of a party in Barano, imagining her as she was when, full of energy, she taught us, and not as, instead, she must be now, worse than when she was taken away in the ambulance, worse than when I had seen her in the hospital. My satisfaction in having invented an effective lie vanished. I lost the frenzy of complicity. I became resentful again. I asked myself why I supported Leela, why I covered for her. In fact, she wanted to betray her husband. She wanted to violate the sacred bond of marriage. She wanted to tear off her condition of wife. She wanted to do a thing that would provoke Stefano, if he should find out, to bash her head in. Suddenly, I remembered what she had done to the wedding dress photograph, and I felt sick to my stomach. Now, I thought, she is behaving in the same way, and not with a photograph, but with the very person of Signora Caracci. And in this case, too, she pulls me in to help her. Nino is a tool. Yes. Yes. Like the scissors, the paste, the paint. He is being used to disfigure her. Toward what terrible act is she driving me? And why do I let myself be driven? We found him waiting for us at the beach. He asked anxiously, "So?" She said, "Yes." They ran off to swim without even inviting me. And besides, I wouldn't have gone. I felt chilled by anxiety. And then why swim? To stay near the shore alone, with my fear of the deep water. There was some wind, some strips of cloud. The sea was a little rough. They dived in without hesitation. Leela, with a long cry of joy. They were happy, full of their own romance. They had the energy of those who successfully seize what they desire, no matter the cost. Moving with determined strokes, they were immediately lost amid the waves. I felt chained to an intolerable pact of friendship. How torturous everything was. It was I who had dragged Leela to Ischia. I had used her to pursue Nino, hopelessly. I had relinquished the money from the bookstore on Via Mezzocanone for the money that she gave me. I had put myself in her service, and now I was playing the role of the servant who comes to the aid of her mistress. I was covering for her adultery. I was preparing it. I was helping her take Nino, take him in my place, be fucked. Yes, fucked. Fucked by him for a whole day and a whole night. Give him blowjobs. My temples began to throb. I kicked the sand with my heel once, twice, three times. It was a thrill to hear echoing in my head childhood words, overloaded with sex imagined in ignorance. High school disappeared. The wonderful sonority of the books disappeared, of the translations from Greek and Latin. I stared at the sparkling sea and the long, livid array of clouds that was moving from the horizon toward the blue sky, toward the white streak of condensation. And I could barely see them, Nino and Leela, black dots. I couldn't tell if they were swimming toward the massive clouds on the horizon or turning back. I wished that they would drown and that death would take from them the joys of the next day. 67. I heard someone calling me. I turned suddenly.
"So I had good eyesight," said a teasing male voice.
"I told you it was her," said a female voice. I recognized them immediately. I sat up. It was Michele Solara and Giliola, along with her brother, a boy of 12 called Lello. I welcomed them warmly,
even though I never said, sit down. I hoped that for some reason they were in a hurry, that they would leave